dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host for what I think of as an intelligence briefing of the war for the free world, the war we are very much in. Few people chronicle it better than our first guest. He is Bill Roggio. He is the managing editor of the Long War Journal. You can find it at longwarjournal.com. You can also find his works elsewhere, as well as the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, where he is a senior fellow and a man that we turn to with great enthusiasm each week for his assessment of where things are in this long war. Bill Roggio, welcome back. Good to have you with us, sir.
Thanks, Frank. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Where to begin? I guess with ISIS, shall we? This group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham, or Iraq and the Levant, or whatever guise they're going under at the moment, it seems as though their ambitions are extending now beyond creating a caliphate in Syria and Iraq. We're hearing talk of Jordan and the so-called occupied territories. Even Cyprus, evidently, is something they've set their sights on. What's the latest in your estimate, and can they in fact reasonably expect to achieve any of these larger goals?
Well, yeah, look, ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham, it is a global jihadist group just like al-Qaeda. And it has a goal, and that goal is to impose a global Islamic caliphate and impose a Sharia law. So it's always, you know, it's going to seek to get beyond Iraq and Syria. I think it might be a little premature as it's still in a major fight right now, but this group is riding high after taking back control of vast areas of Iraq over the last half year, particularly large Iraq's second city, Mosul, on June 10th, and it sweeps outward to the outskirts of Baghdad. So, yeah, it certainly is. It should be. Look, if I'm Jordan, I would feel very threatened right now. I took control of a border crossing the other day. Now, the status of this crossing is certainly under dispute right now. It's hard to know who controls it. But ISIS has made threats to Jordan and the King of Jordan. It has a lot of Jordanians within its rank. Remember Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the founder of what is the predecessor of ISIS, which was al-Qaeda in Iraq. He's a Jordanian. There's a lot of Jordanian jihadists in ISIS, and there's a lot of Jordanians in Jordan that support ISIS as well. So, yeah, I mean, everyone should be worried right now. They control two sets of territories, or they control major parts of two countries. They have a lot of resources to draw from, a lot of individuals to recruit from. They're setting up training camps, and while they're fighting their local insurgencies, they're setting an eye to countries outside of its existing area of operation.
Bill Roggio, I think you're so right to be pointing out that the ambitions of this outfit, and indeed its confreres under other banners in the global jihad, is indeed that they seek a worldwide caliphate. In fact, they believe it's God's will that it will be achieved. So it is simply a matter of time. And you have a report that in your Long War Journal, Bill, about an Egyptian prominent commander in the al-Nusra Front changing sides and joining ISIS. I guess this is the phenomenon of the strong horse that bin Laden talked about. You win on the battlefield, you will attract more recruits. It also obviously ought to conjure up images of greater dangers ahead for countries like Jordan, for example. And Bill, one of the other things that I think you've mentioned on our program before is that we're dealing not simply with a terrorist group in ISIS. We're now really looking at a terrorist army, by some estimates, a very wealthy one at that, one that is bent on taking and holding territory as well.
Yeah, look, this has always been the global jihadist way of operating. Look, al-Qaeda, what did it expend most of its efforts on prior to 9/11 in the 1990s. Was it terrorist attacks, or was it fighting alongside helping the Afghan Taliban defeat the Northern Alliance? It was the latter, helping the Afghan Taliban defeating the Northern Alliance. Remember, their goal, ultimate goal, is a global caliphate. They believe they're going to get it by taking over Islamic countries first and then expanding ever outward. So, yeah, I mean, you know, terrorism is merely a tactic for this group. It's a dangerous one. It's a major threat. But this, I think this is a major failing. This is what, the administration either it knows the answer and is pretending differently, or it just doesn't understand al-Qaeda.
Or, for that matter, any of the global jihadists.
Yeah, right. They don't realize they're global jihadists. That have a they have an ideology. They're looking to establish a state, not conduct individual attacks against the U.S. for terrorism's sake. It's the major failing of many Western analysts as well as the heads of state.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about this intelligence failing or failure of intelligence, as the case may be, with Fred Flights momentarily. But Bill, let me just ask you a question about this idea that we're dealing with a very, very wealthy group of jihadists. By some estimates, we have heard they've got as much as $2 billion in their war chest, literally war chest. Some of it obviously liberated from the banks in Mosul that they ran recently, but some of it from elsewhere. Talk, if you would, about state sponsorship of these guys. Are they receiving support from Qatar and Saudi Arabia perhaps as part of the great game between those Sunni governments and the Shiites of Iraq and Iran?
In the case of Qatar, I wouldn't doubt it. What we do know are there is extremely wealthy individuals in these countries who are known, who donate to these groups, and who are not sanctioned for doing so, or not put in jail or have received any punishment for it. So is that state sponsorship when the state turns a blind eye to what's happening, when they knowingly have individuals, either top, you know, sheikhs or princes or whatnot, members of government? Exactly. I mean, to me, it's a form of state sponsorship when the state does nothing. You know, unlike in Pakistan, where the state actually supports some of these terrorist groups, you know, the Haqqani Network, but I mean, it's a step down, one step down, a small step down, but it still is, in my opinion, it's a form of state sponsorship that is just as bad as direct support as the Pakistanis do to, like, Lashkar-e-Taiba or Haqqani Network or other groups.
Just with a modicum of plausible deniability for the government in question. Hey, Bill, let me just turn quickly. And again, our guest is Bill Roggio, the managing editor of a marvelous online resource, The Long War Journal. You can find it at longwarjournal.org. One of the questions that doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot of attention or being actively, you know, thought through at the very least, is if things are working out so horrifically with respect to Iraq as a direct result of our abandoning the place, shouldn't we be giving some second thought to the president's decision that he's going to do the same with respect to Afghanistan?
Yeah, that's really the, you know, the $10 million question in my mind. Anyone who watched, followed the development of the Iraqi and the Afghan security forces, if you asked them prior to this, prior to, say, the beginning of the year, if you felt that after U.S. withdrawal, who would have a better chance of surviving, the Iraqis or the Afghans? Everyone would have said, I think the Iraqis would be in a better position to stand up to an Islamist jihadist onslaught. Well, we're seeing what's happened to the Iraqis. What do we think is going to happen to the Afghans when we step out, when we get down to 10,000, when we step out fully after the end of, 2016? Hundreds of fighters just attacked across five districts in Kandahar province. This is why we still have almost 33,000 troops in country. The Afghan Taliban is preparing for its version of ISIS's takeover. It's going to happen. We're going to be reading. It's going to be like deja vu all over again. We are going to see the same thing happening today in Iraq is going to be happening in Afghanistan in the next several years, without a doubt.
I'm afraid you're right. The trouble is if we persist in putting ourselves in the same position we're in vis-a-vis Iraq today, we will have no good options to deal with what is going to be a further very serious advance for the global jihad and defeat for us and our friends. At that, we have to leave it, I'm afraid. Bill, thank you so much for your superb work at the Long War Journal, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Keep it up. Come back to us again next week, as you faithfully do. Next up, as promised, we'll talk with Fred Flights about, was this an intelligence failure, or is the Obama administration simply clueless? Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
On August 2, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.americanfreedomlawcenter.org.
Hello, I'm Gary Sinise. It's been 20 years since Forrest Gump, and the story of Lieutenant Dan's triumphant return to normalcy is still a part of my life. I'm honored to share it with the real-life Lieutenant Dan's living among us, the more than 1,700 battle-injured amputees that have returned home since 9/11. As citizens, it's our duty to ensure these heroes get the care they need. Join the Gary Sinise Foundation and help support America's wounded heroes. Visit GarySiniseFoundation.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're We're back. We're joined by Fred Flights, one of our duty experts on matters involving intelligence, having served as a career officer in the intelligence business. He was at the Central Intelligence Agency for nearly 20 years, also with John Bolton at the State Department and on Capitol Hill on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence in the House as one of its professional staff members. Now a senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy and one of the senior analysts at Langley Intelligence Group Network.org. Welcome, Fred. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Good to be here, Frank.
Let me start by asking you about a question that is on a lot of people's minds, where did this ISIS outfit come from? We're being told by some in the policy side of the Obama administration that there was an intelligence failure here, that they simply didn't realize what a formidable force this might be in a place like Iraq. Some have even said that they're getting most of their information these days from Facebook and Twitter. What are your thoughts about this? Where does the fault lie?
ISIS is an outcropping of al-Qaeda in Iraq. It was actually founded by associates of al-Baghdadi, the current head of this organization. He wanted to merge, and the organization he started became the al-Nusra Front. He wanted to take control of the al-Nusra Front and merge it with al-Qaeda in Iraq, which he renamed al-Qaeda in Iraq, the Islamic State of Iraq, and the Sham. The Sham is Greater Syria, including Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, the Sinai, and I heard yesterday it may also include Cyprus. There was a split between al-Qaeda Central in Pakistan and ISIS because ISIS supposedly was too brutal. And I think there may be some truth to that, that ISIS was beheading people and alienating the local population, but also it was a power thing. Al-Qaeda Central wanted this operation in Syria under their control. Now, concerning the intelligence failure, I'm just thinking the administration is doing this again. The Langley Intelligence Group Network, we've been following this for months. I think probably we've been following it since the middle of last year.
We're discussing with Fred Flights of the Langley Intelligence Group Network, the intelligence on ISIS. You had it in the unclassified domain. Bill Roggio did as well, Fred. But could it possibly be that the official U.S. intelligence agencies of the United States government, with all of their resources and capabilities, missed it?
I'm confident that this is one of many threats the intelligence community provided excellent analysis on, and the Obama administration simply ignored it.
They ignored it for policy reasons, or that they didn't want to be bothered with the implications of dealing with it, should it eventuate, as it has, as a formidable threat in a country that President Obama had declared an end to the war, namely Iraq.
It was politically inconvenient intelligence. This administration has been writing off the threat from radical Islamists. They did this concerning Benghazi. I think they've done it all throughout the world. There's been evidence that al-Qaeda has reconstituted itself in North Africa, is trying to stage smaller but sophisticated attacks. This goes against the Obama administration's mantra that Osama bin Laden is dead, al-Qaeda is on the run. And I know this stuff's being used in the administration. I just think they chose to ignore it.
You know, I wonder whether, to some extent, this is also a function of the people that they are listening to. If it's not the intelligence community, there's a chap by the name of Mohammed Elibiari. He is a member of the advisory council in the Department of Homeland Security, a senior fellow there now, we're told. He engaged in a Twitter exchange with one of my former colleagues, David Raboy, a week or two ago now, Fred Flights, and said very directly that the caliphate is inevitable. In other words, the realization of some, at least, of the ambitions of this ISIS group to establish a transnational Islamist state is inevitable. If you're listening to the likes of Elibiari, and by the way, I believe he was instrumental in the purging of the training materials of the FBI, the military, the intelligence community, Department of Homeland Security personnel, which presumably has made them somewhat less capable of, as you say, understanding the threat of radical Islam, not just the politicals, but even the people in the front lines of our defense. This doubtless has contributed to the problem we've got at the moment.
I think this administration has turned to people like Ali Biari and others and tried to listen to who they want to hear, the people who are saying the message that fits the policy. From an administration that began at the very beginning with the Homeland Security Secretary trying to remove the word terrorism and and rename it man-caused disasters to incompetent advisors like this guy. I mean, it's you can see the trend.
Another thing you've written about recently, Fred, I believe, is the sort of internal thrashing and the thrashing of the administration, including by some of its friends, over this question of whether or not it has overstepped the bounds in using drones to go after American citizens, notably Anwar al-Awlaki. Talk a little bit about where you think we find ourselves at this point. And whether, in fact, this is gratuitous and wrongheaded criticism.
Well, 2 points. Anwar al-Awlaki was a terrorist leader. He inspired the Boston bombers. 9/11 hijackers went to his mosque. The decision taken that was correct. The administration vetted it very carefully through the Justice Department. They vetted it with Congress. That's why no senior congressional leader objected after this guy, who was born in New Mexico, but was joined in enemy force, was killed. And I think to say that this is a violation of the due process rights of Americans is just outrageous. I mean, he joined al-Qaeda. On the other hand, I am critical of the administration for taking a kill but not capture approach to drones. As a former intelligence officer, we can get a lot of crucial information from these guys, but the administration doesn't want to send them to Guantanamo, doesn't know what to do with them. I am sympathetic to criticism of the administration on that score, but not to taking out al-Awlaki.
And talk in that regard, Fred, a little bit about this fellow that we picked up in Benghazi recently. He is evidently on a slow boat back to the United States being interrogated. But are you concerned that we may not get all of the information that he has about his comrades in arms and their capabilities out of some sense that even when we do get our hands on these folks rather than kill them, that we allow them to lawyer up and give them rights that they are not entitled to, but enable them thereby to shut up, as Andy McCarthy said, not only not provide us intelligence, but gain access to ours as part of the court proceedings and discovery.
That's exactly right. This guy is an enemy combatant. He should not be tried in U.S. courts with the protection of the U.S. Constitution, with Miranda rights. And I'm afraid that's where this is going. The administration's trying to split the baby here by putting him on the slow boat, as you said. But he's going to be read Miranda rights for his trial in the United States. That's going to give him the right to ask for access to classified information and to claim that he was inappropriately apprehended. This is simply the wrong way to go. He should be in a war crimes tribunal at Guantanamo. But as I said a minute ago, the administration doesn't want to go that way.
Fred, in closing, we have a report going back to this drones business and killing rather than capturing these guys out of the Henry Stimson Center, a left-of-center organization that generally gets things wrong, in my judgment. But they're caviling about a lack of transparency about this drone business. Having said what you did, do you have any thoughts on this particular report and its recommendations?
Well, they're complaining about a lack of transparency and collateral damage from these attacks. The drone strikes are mostly conducted by the CIA for a good reason. It's a covert action. There's legal reasons we don't want it done by the Pentagon. The idea that they want more transparency is really pretty ridiculous. But I think the main thing is they simply object to drone strikes at all. They don't recognize that there's been real accomplishments in taking out al-Qaeda leaders with these attacks. As I said, the only criticism I agree with is that we may be a little bit too eager to use them because the administration doesn't capture terror. But otherwise, I think the report is overblown.
It's a capability that we need for sure, and we think we ought to resist efforts to restrict it. Fred, thank you so much for joining us. As always, Fred Flights, now with the Center for Security Policy and Langley Intelligence Group Network. You can find his work at LinkNet.com. Keep up the good work, my friend, and come back to us again soon. Next up, Representative John Carter, the House Appropriations Committee on the invasion of our southern border reserve.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Millions of women are brutalized by Sharia-adherent Muslims. Every once in a while, an individual and her story stands out. One is Hayan Hirsi Ali, who was mutilated and forced into marriage in Somalia, then fled, becoming a Dutch parliamentarian and best-selling author. Another is Malala Yousafzai, a courageous Pakistani girl nearly killed for espousing education for women. Now, Maryam Ibrahim suffers at the hands of Sudan's government, one of the world's most horrible Sharia-compliant regimes. She was sentenced to death for refusing to renounce her Christian faith. An appeals court overturned the sentence after an outpouring of international criticism. But Maryam was rearrested as she prepared to leave Sudan for safety in the United States. Her torture must end, as it should, for every woman oppressed by Sharia. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by Congressman John Carter. He represents the people of the 31st District of Texas in the House of Representatives. He's in his sixth term there, a member of what is called the Cardinals in the House of Representatives, one of the leaders of the House Appropriations Committee. In fact, he chairs its Homeland Security Appropriations Subcommittee, an extraordinarily important role at a very, very important time. Congressman Carter, welcome back. It's great to have you with us, sir.
Thank you, Frank. I'm glad to be here.
Coming from Texas, of course, you are very, very familiar with the problem that we're facing at the moment of what I think of as an invasion across our southern border, particularly coming into Texas now, of tens, if not many more thousands, of not just children, but others as well. Talk a little bit about the nature of that invasion at the moment, and do you see any slackening of it?
No, we don't see any slackening of it. In fact, it seems to be escalating. But more importantly, that everybody get a clear picture of this. We're hearing a lot in the press about the unaccompanied minors, and that's a big problem. But as they come, also others are coming. And so we're having record numbers of crossings, and these crossings are very different from the crossings we usually see on a day-in, day-out basis on the Rio Grande. And that is, they're coming across and immediately looking for an officer to surrender to. They're not coming trying to sneak into the country and dodge the officials and try to work their way north and out of the valley so they can get to a job someplace. They're coming in here just turning themselves in and assuming that they're going to be granted some kind of permission. They call it permiso, to be able to come in here. And it's quite honestly, it's because we've given a signal by the president's actions that this is something that would happen. And then there are people down in these three countries that are heavily promoting that now's the time. You get this compromiso is real. All you have to do is, you know, jump in with the smugglers and get smuggled up there and you'll be in business. You'll get to be in the United States safe and sound and all will be well. And it's contrary to our laws. It's contrary to the rule of law in the United States. And quite honestly, these people are being defrauded, although it may actually ultimately result that they do get to stay. But quite honestly, I hope we were able to stem the tide because it's really a flood.
Yeah, it's a flood. And as you say, there's no end in sight, Congressman Carter. And I just want to drill down on something you alluded to there, the president's policies. There are those among his apologists, most especially some in the press, who've maintained that this is all about, you know, drug and gang violence in their countries of origin. But I think the evidence is now unmistakable. And you've said as much, both in what you just indicated and elsewhere, that this really is a direct result of a kind of magnet that the president has created for precisely this kind of invasion.
The immediate upsurge of this happening, we started to see it in January. Early, it started going up in January of 12 slightly, and then in January of 13, it started going up pretty expeditiously. And of course, in by May of 14, it was up. This is about the miners. It was up to like 9,000 a month. And interestingly, the DACA announcement made by the president was August of 2012, and the acceleration begins there.
That's the DREAM Act.
It's very clear.
Yep. And again, Congressman Carter, what you've appreciated so well is when the president said, you know, we're going to start extending what amounts to amnesty to the so-called dreamers, young people who've been brought here with, you know, their parents, it really did create an opening for people to claim that they were eligible for that, whether they just came across the border or whether they had been here before. And I guess what I'm really interested in is looking at it from the perspective of, you know, a border state representative, what this is doing to those who are responsible for protecting our border, that we've had on the one hand this kind of magnet, and on the other, they're being diverted into, as I understand it, changing diapers and feeding and otherwise tending to these kids. What does that mean for border security at this point?
The Border Patrol is bound and determined to process everybody, which is that's their requirement, and so they have to process. It's pulling Border Patrolmen from San Diego to Brownsville off the main line and into processing centers. Initially, it all was coming down in what we call the Lower Valley in Texas, or the, from Billy McCallum and Brownsville. And the big surge is all taking place in that particular area. They were overwhelmed, and so they shipped some of them up to Laredo because Laredo wasn't receiving that. Immediately, Laredo was being overwhelmed by the shipping. So they moved them up the border, and all of our border posts now, basically from Brownsville to San Diego, are helping to pick up the slack, and that's where we are getting complaints from people like in Arizona saying Texas are flying these people in here, and we're trying flying them in to get them processed legally according to the law. We're trying to utilize the resources we've got to do it, but the real world is, and I just got a briefing from the Texas Department of Public Safety yesterday, is as we crowd our people, our online people on the border, into these processing centers, we're opening up the peripheral areas for drug transport. And so in Texas, our Texas, you know, Texas are really, this is our biggest problem right now. We've got a large force of the Department of Public Safety has moved down to the border to try to fill in the blanks on stopping the drug trafficking. Drug trafficking is illegal in our state, just like it's illegal in federal law. And so now the DPS is down there helping those people. But, you know, this is a major draw on all sorts of law enforcement resources in Texas.
Congressman, I was down in Austin meeting with the leadership of your Department of Public Safety and admire tremendously what they're doing, but it's clearly not what is appropriate to have what amount to state police trying to deal with this kind of major new threat.
Yeah, let's be clear. The DPS will tell you straight up, we're not doing immigration arrests. We're doing criminal arrests. And so they're not down there doing the Border Patrol's job. The Texas are dealing with the issues of the drugs and other illegal transport.
But I guess what I wanted to get at with you, Congressman John Carter, again, as our guest, you're the chairman of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Homeland Security. You appreciate probably better than anybody else in the Congress that it's not just drug trafficking. It's not just, sex trafficking or other human smuggling that we're dealing with now, and particularly in these areas of the border that are pretty much wide open. There is the distinct possibility and some evidence that it's actually happening, that we've got people who wish to do us real harm, including among them jihadists or terrorists of other stripes. You've been appointed by the Speaker of the House, one of seven members, to try to get your hands around this invasion and what will be done about it. I know you haven't met yet as a group, but what are your thoughts about what we can and must do at this point, Congressman?
Well, first, Frank, you know, I'm a former felony history judge, and so I approach the world from enforce the law standpoint. Always have and I always will. We have laws. Laws are to be enforced. The president signed, and all the people that work in the executive branch take an oath to do that. And it's time to do it. Okay? And we may have to make some fixes on some of our laws because we have to let the rule of law prevail. If we destroy the rule of law, we destroy our nation. You know, we cleaned up cities of New York and Philadelphia and Boston by saying lawlessness breeds lawlessness, so clean up your community and it'll clean up crime. And that's the truth. Well, if you've got this kind of criminality down there on the border, do you know that it's estimated that the cartels from the and the smugglers, for the expense of these people coming up here and pay everybody who crosses the border, pays the cartels in Mexico, that they made $53 million in the month of May on human transport? I mean, this is a cash crop for them. These are dangerous, dangerous people, probably as dangerous a criminal element as there is on the globe right now.
And Congressman, I'm afraid there's so much more to talk about on this, but we are out of time. We appreciate your commitment to enforcing the law and hope that you and your comrades will, your colleagues in the Congress and others responsible for protecting us will see to that first and foremost, certainly before we do any liberalization of the immigration laws. Thank you for your service to our country, sir, past and that you're providing at the moment. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon, if you will. Next up, we'll be talking with Bill Gertz. We'll get his take on the exercise with the Chinese and compromise of intelligence there. Straight ahead.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At America'sMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined, as we have the distinct privilege of being each week, by Bill Gertz. He is one of the preeminent reporters on matters involving national security in the nation, and frankly has been for decades. He is the author of the prize-winning Inside the Ring column at the Washington Times and a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, the author of numerous books on various subjects touching on the national security space, and an extraordinary guest always. Bill, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
As ever, you're bird-dogging the threat from several sources that seem not to be getting attention from your colleagues in the press or even, for that matter, the Obama administration. Let's start with a couple of them that are top of my mind. The Chinese have been brought into the major annual exercises that the United States engages in with its free world allies in the Western Pacific, RIMPAC it's called. What on earth is up with that, Bill? And are there reasons to be concerned that this is an ill-advised idea at best and at worst a serious intelligence and perhaps strategic vulnerability?
Yeah, this is a really important story. This is part of the Pentagon's kind of feel-good military exchange program with China. They believe that by inviting China into this largest international Pacific exercise is held every 2 years, it's called RINPAC, that this is somehow going to moderate Chinese behavior. And a lot of people are saying this is a crazy idea. For two reasons, mainly that it's going to open up our warfighting capabilities, specifically naval warfighting capabilities, to the Chinese, who are known to be using these exchanges for spying and intelligence gathering. Additionally, it's also rewarding the Chinese at a time when Chinese belligerence in Asia is at an all-time high. They're bullying all of their neighbors in the South China Sea and threatening all kinds of things to the Japanese over the East China Sea. So a number of congressmen have raised questions about this and said that these exercises should be limited to allies. But yet, under the Obama administration's softline policies, they have this false notion that this is somehow going to build trust with the Chinese, when in fact the Chinese are not interested in building trust. They view us as their main enemy.
Yeah, and the question I guess that occurs, Bill, is not only that we've got to be emboldening the Chinese in this kind of blind eye that we're turning to their aggressive behavior, but we've got to be undermining our allies who make up, as I say, most of the rest of the company in that RIMPAC exercise. How is this being perceived, in your judgment, Bill, by our friends and allies in Westpac?
Well, basically, at least in the case of the Japanese, they are clearly viewing the United States as increasingly signaling weakness. And, you know, in the geopolitical realm, perceptions are often our reality. So the Japanese, under Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, are really kind of stepping up their game in Asia. Abe has been making alliances with Japan and India and Australia and developing stronger defense capabilities, which is a good thing. But it's bad for the other nations in the region that really look to the U.S. for leadership, especially maintaining a military presence. Again, the Obama administration's policy has been one of projecting weakness and trying to constrain the U.S., and this has really emboldened enemies, specifically in China and other areas as well.
Another one, of course, being Russia, and I wanted to turn next to that. In the Washington Free Beacon, you talked about the Russians' latest revelations in terms of their strategic force modernization program. Both tell us what is the new news on that score, Bill, and how that ties in with some of the aggressive behavior that the Russians have been engaged in towards us as well as the Japanese in recent days.
Yeah, this is an important story that amidst this growing tensions over the Ukraine, where Russia is launching a covert action campaign to destabilize that country, and then using massing of troops to threaten them. Well, just recently on Monday, the Russians launched a large-scale surprise exercise, and last week they conducted unprecedented cruise missile firing of a brand-new air-launched cruise missile that comes in both nuclear-tipped as well as conventional-tipped. And it's clearly, this is the latest saber-rattling. Admiral Cecil Haney, the commander of the U.S. Strategic Command, said clearly that these stepped-up exercises and threatening maneuvers are all related to Moscow's effort to pressure Ukraine and pressure the West. And Haney confirmed this. He said it's a cause for concern.
Yeah, it certainly should be. And to the extent that it further underscores the point that despite President Obama's insistence that he's moving the world to one rid of nuclear weapons, nobody else is following. And indeed, as you've reported elsewhere, Bill, with the increasing incursions of the bear bombers that might carry these new cruise missiles into our airspace and that of the Japanese and I guess Canadians as well, this is not just fatuous nonsense. It is potentially really reckless in the extreme. Bill, one of the things that is a little bit of good news is that we have had a successful test of our missile defense capability. There have been some difficulties with this ground-based mid-course interceptor program. Talk a little bit about how that program looks in the wake of this most recent successful test.
Yes, this was a successful test of what's being called the ground-based interceptor. These are the marquee systems of our long-range missile defenses. In other words, when the North Koreans were to fire a missile at the U.S., these are the ones that would be the mainstay of countering and knocking out those missiles. They've been undergoing problems due in part to the kind of neglect under the Obama administration, which is dominated by arms control experts who view missile defense as definitely something that upsets their arms control agenda. So this was a very, very important test. If this test had not gone well, it would have fueled the pro-arms control people who said that we should downplay or get rid of our missile defense system, which is really a vital strategic defense mechanism for the United States.
Yeah, the neglect in the past has been a serious problem. You're absolutely right. And even if it's now working, it's of such modest capability in the face of the kinds of modernization programs that the Russians and Chinese have been engaged in, as you've been reporting, Bill, at the Washington Times and the Washington Free Beacon, including some designed, we're told, to defeat any such missile defenses. It's the very least we can do, and hopefully we'll be doing a lot more. Bill, in the remaining minute or two, I just wanted to call attention to something that you led your Inside the Ring column with this week, namely a film called The Interview, which is, I guess, going into theaters shortly unless Kim Jong-il has his way. Talk a little bit about The Interview and where this may take a Hollywood script into, you know, just geostrategic turmoil.
Yes. This week, Hollywood released a trailer for this film starring Seth Rogen and James Franco called The Interview. It's about two journalists who land an interview with Kim Jong-un, and the CIA recruits them to assassinate the dictator. And yesterday, the North Korean government went crazy over this, issued a harshly threatening statement saying it was an act of war and threatening unspecified retaliation against the United States. This is the same government that has been accused of genocide of its own people through fans and harsh policies, as well as the fact that North Korea last year did a propaganda video showing a nuclear attack on New York City. So this is the latest in the back and forth with North Korea.
Well, it will be very interesting to see if the Obama administration urges that this kind of film not be shown. They're big on, it seems, punishing people for filmmaking and good with restricting freedom of speech. So I wouldn't put it past them, especially against this backdrop of threats from Dear Leader 3.0. Bill, so much more to talk about and so little time, but we're delighted to have this visit with you as always each week. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for what you do at the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times. Keep it up. Come back to us again very soon. We hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afton. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.